That wasn't so hard. The burden of civilization falls upon us, Cartelier said, and led her inside.
Valkra followed him. You haven't introduced yourself to me.
Why would I? That's nonsense. You already know who I am, Cartelier said.
The old Boxen's work area seemed more like a repository for junk and discarded items. She could probably repurpose most of it into something useful.
I can see that your armor is running low on power. Step inside the cradle over there and we'll get that squared away, Cartelier said.
Valkra walked over to the cradle and backed up inside it. The clamps took hold of the armor and she initiated the release, causing the front plates to open and allowing her to step free. Cartelier watched her.
You could use some time in a resonance chamber, he said.
I don't have time to sit around and meditate right now.
Oh, is that so?
Cartelier said in a surprised tone.
And here I thought you were grounded from further missions.
Valkra looked over at him in shock.
And here I thought you didn't know who I was.
Cartelier chuckled.
You're a clever one. I'll grant you that.
The cradle holding her armor swiveled around, and a transparent shield came down. Inside, nozzle ends of thick cables slinked down from the ceiling and began spraying a treatment solution. Valkra watched the worn areas of her armor seem to repair themselves as the solution worked its way through.
That will need some time to set and recharge, Cartelier said.
Fine. I'll be back later to pick it up, Valkra said, and headed for the door.
Tell me, Cartelier said, how long do you think you can fool them?
Valkra stopped in her tracks and turned around.
What are you talking about?
Cartelier slowly walked over to her. His flaxen gaze was hard, denoting the shrewd intelligence behind his eyes.
I think you know, but since you'll probably keep denying it until I come right out and say it, then that's what I'll do. You've got the Mardoxian potential in you, Cartelier said.
All Boxens do, Valkra replied.
That's true, but some more than others. In another time, you'd have been recruited to become a Mardoxian priestess, Cartelier said.
No thanks, Valkra replied.
Why not? Why be a forger when you could be so much more? Cartelier asked.
Valkra swallowed hard.
Even if I were, I'd much rather be out there doing something useful than trapped in this block of ice, she said.
I see, Cartelier said,
and he walked over to the wall and began rummaging through some things. Valkra stood there for a few moments, unsure of what she should do.
Will you tell the council?
Cartelier found what he was looking for and turned around. In his hands was a small metallic box. He set the box on the table and opened it. Inside, a pyramid rose with a crystal sphere resting on top of it. He turned the power on, and the crystal sphere began to glow and hover just above the tip of the pyramid. Valkra felt something deep inside her rise up. The crystal sphere started to spin, and a beam shot forth. Valkra would have ducked if she'd had the chance, but all she saw was a white pathway of light.
Don't be scared, Cartelier said in a soothing tone. Just breathe and focus on where your last mission was.
Valkra sucked in a deep breath. The beam didn't hurt, but she felt as if she'd just ingested stimulants and was now wide awake. She built an image of the city in her mind. The toxic rain clouds had moved on, and she felt as if she were floating above the city. Then she was back at the extraction point. Collapsed buildings had taken over the area, and she saw many protectors trapped. They didn't move and must be dead. She circled the area and found her dead squadmates. Valkra let out a soft cry when she saw Ra'nem, then felt herself being pulled back, and she was once again in Cartelier's work area. He powered the machine off.
Well, that settles it, don't you think? Cartelier asked.
What did you do to me?
I didn't do anything. That was all you. This machine can help novice priests focus their abilities.
Are you going to say anything? Please don't tell anyone, Volkra said.
Cartelier watched her for a moment.
Your abilities could be of great value to everyone at Haven. We've been without someone like you for a long time.
They'll never let me leave, Volkra said.
Would that be so bad? If you keep going out there, you will eventually be killed, Cartelier said.
Volkra's brows pushed forward into a frown.
Perhaps I'd rather be out there accomplishing something than scraping away an existence here. Out there I'm free. For a time, at least.
Cartelier looked away.
It's not so bad here. At least the Protectors haven't found this place.
There is that, Volkra said.
One so young shouldn't be so bitter. You have your health, and you get to live another day, which is much more than I can say for many others.
This isn't living.
What would you have us do? If you were running things here, what would you focus on? Cartelier asked.
I would focus on getting us out of here, away from Sethion. No one left behind, Volkra said.
We tried. The orbital defensive platforms are configured to destroy any ships leaving the planet, Cartelier said.
I don't care. I'd find a way. There has to be a way to disable the platforms, Volkra said.
They're locked, and we don't have the capability of destroying them from here, Cartelier said.
Then I'd send a signal out for any Boxons to assist us. Defensive platforms can't block outbound signals.
Cartelier nodded.
You're right about that. A signal has been sent out. There has been no answer.
Then I'd keep sending a signal every day until someone came, Volkra said.
Haven 201 has been the last safe place on this planet for almost 20 cycles. During that time, I've had a signal sent out. I've even taken over anything in orbit I could and sent signals from there. When that failed, I tried flying remote ships off the planet and managed to take out some defensive platforms that way. But it wasn't enough. We even managed to get a ship off-planet past the defense platforms, but it was destroyed shortly after that by a drone blockade. So believe me when I tell you, no one is coming to help us, Cartelier said.
Volkra looked away.
No one left behind, she said softly.
That's what you salvaging types say to each other to fool yourselves into believing you'll come back from whatever mission they send you on, Cartelier said.
What would you have us do? Just sit here? Volkra asked.
That's what I intend to do. You have the Mardoxian potential in you, and perhaps you'll be able to do something the rest of us couldn't, Cartelier said.
Volkra sighed. Did you really do all those things you said you did?
Not alone. The Chaos Wars lasted a long time. There are shipyards out there with enough space to get every Boxon off this planet, but we have no way of getting there. The Boxons who left us behind won't return. In the beginning, the different havens worked together to try and find a way to leave. We even thought the quarantine zone was a good idea. A necessity for the survival of our species. Those ideas sustained us for a while. Then, at some point, entire havens risked everything to leave, and, well, there aren't very many of us left, Cartelier said.
Volkra knew of those Boxons who'd been able to leave. They must have gone somewhere. Why hadn't they returned for them?
That thing you used on me. It allowed me to return to the location of our last mission.
Only in your mind. You were still in this room, I assure you, Cartelier said.
It was like I was actually there. During the mission, it was almost as if I could sense the Protectors closing in on us. But it was also confusing, Volkra said.
Some records say those with the Mardoxian potential can contact one another over vast distances, Cartelier said.
Volkra's eyes widened.
But you don't want anyone to know what you are, Cartelier said.
What I am is a salvager. I go out there to get the things we need to survive,
Valkra said.
Yes, but now you know you can be so much more. The question now is, what are you going to do?
Cardellier said.
I don't know.
Cardellier regarded her for a moment and frowned.
I won't say anything for now. You're welcome to look through the records I have here. Perhaps they'll help you figure out what to do.
Valkra thought about it. She was grounded from further missions. Perhaps Cardellier was right and she could contact another Boxen with the Mardoxian potential, explain to them that there are Boxens still here fighting for their lives. Her thoughts drifted back to the scavenging mission. There'd been times when she'd thought there was someone watching her, but she'd been so focused on staying alive that she hadn't given it a thought. Valkra went over to the info terminal and began researching the Mardoxian sect. Chapter 17. Kyle Matthews slipped into his newly designed Earth Coalition Force Standard Multiple Environment Spacesuit. Since there was no shortage of acronyms in NASA or the military, and since the ECF wasn't proving to be any different, the wearers of the Multiple Environment Spacesuit liked to call it simply a mess suit.
These new mess suits are pretty comfy, Tom said. I can't imagine wearing one of those bulky old spacesuits astronauts used to wear.
Tom Blake was 26 years old, a communications engineer who'd been among the first through the ECF Academy, designed to bridge the gap between the emerging technologies from the Boxens with humanity's own twist.
They weren't that bad, Kyle said.
He pushed his arms into the sleeves of his mess suit, and the smart nanofibers adjusted themselves to his build. Tom was right. These were comfortable. It was almost like wearing a really thick sweatshirt, but it hardly restricted his movements at all. Kyle's internal HUD from his neural implants registered the mess suit with newly available options. The smart nanofibers could reconfigure their matrix to enhance the suit's abilities to augment the wearer's strength and detect injuries.
You actually wore one of those old spacesuits, Colonel?
Kevin asked.
At the Sacramento Bay training facility, they'd let us try them on so we'd learn firsthand how far we've come, Kyle said.
Corporal Celia Pearson was already in her mess suit, along with the outer armor coverings. A TRS pulse rifle was in her hands. Lieutenant Kevin Dawson was the next to finish donning his mess suit and reached down to pick up a TRS plasma rifle. They would do some field testing with the weapons if they had time. The TRS pulse rifle was a modified version of what they'd already created without Boxan input. The only thing that was different was the higher-grade materials used that allowed for a more powerful projectile. However, the plasma rifle was entirely new and of Boxen design, which was only slightly modified in size to fit the average person. Kyle only carried a sidearm, as did Tom. This was to be a shakedown training exercise along with the three Boxen team to see how well they could work together. They were using a Boxan shuttle for this exercise. They were still the fastest ships in the solar system, but not for long. Strike fighter assembly lines were almost fully operational, and they'd have several squadrons of those ships available soon. The next ship design they'd started building would be destroyer-class vessels, the construction of which could be seen at the designated area on the new moon. The Boxens were convinced they could build ships faster than they were, but Kyle knew they were already moving at breakneck speeds. General Sheridan had assured them that once they cut their teeth building the strike fighters and destroyers, they'd go for much larger battleship carriers that were still on the design table. Kyle flexed his arms, testing the mess suit, and couldn't find any fault with it.
All right, let's go over the mission specs one more time.
The three of them turned to face him.
We have some shroud monitoring devices that keep going offline. We have drones that go in to effect repairs, but they want us to investigate an actual failed device so we can determine why it keeps happening, Kyle said.
Lieutenant Dawson raised his hand.
Sir, why aren't we using one of the new Eagle shuttles for this?
They need more field testing before we can consider taking them on a mission like this. We'll be traveling with three Boxen soldiers and our role is to run backup and support for them, Kyle said.
He sensed the proverbial rolling of the eyes from Pearson and Dawson. Tom Blake was oblivious to it and was just excited to come along for the ride. Kyle held up his hands in a placating gesture.
I get it. Running support is like being on the third-string team that never gets any playing time. When we have our own ships fully vetted, we'll have the Boxen supporting us on our missions. But right now, this is how it has to be. They put on their helmets and left the mission prep area, walking into the new lunar base hangar where the Boxan shuttle was waiting for them. Outside were three Boxen soldiers in their power armor. "Hello, Evoth. Thanks for letting us tag along," Kyle said.
"It's our honor to have you aboard," Evoth said. "This is Crano and Adyas."
The two teams greeted one another, and Kyle introduced his team and their roles. Most of the Boxens Kyle had met were eager to work with them. Once he'd gotten used to them being 10 feet tall and having skin that reminded him of the bark of a tree, they were actually all right to be around.
"My specialties are co-pilot and medical," Crano said.
Evoth nodded for Adyas to go.
"Technical specialist and engineer," Adyas said, and regarded them for a moment. "I'd blow things up."
Tom Blake perked up at hearing that, and stuck by Adyas as they went aboard the shuttle. Like most things the Boxens made, the shuttle was big. Almost the same size as the spaceship Endurance that was based on pre-Boxen contact designs. Inside the shuttle were two levels, with the bottom level used primarily to store equipment. Adyas led Tom ahead while they checked the equipment in storage. It wouldn't do for them to travel all the way out to a monitoring device and not have the right equipment to repair it. Kyle followed Evoth to the upper level. This wasn't Kyle's first time in a Boxan shuttle, but the smooth interior represented a model of perfection they were hoping to emulate in their own ships. The Boxens had taken a few steps to adapt their equipment for human use. For instance, the staircase leading to the upper level had additional steps installed to accommodate passengers that were people-sized. The ECF fleet was being designed with not only humans serving aboard the vessels, but Boxens as well. Evoth led him to the command platform, which was a slightly raised area in the middle of the upper level. There were three couches on the platform, and Evoth invited Kyle to use the couch next to his. Kyle thanked him and sat down. The couch material instantly adjusted itself for maximum comfort, and he felt as if he were in a plush but firm cradle. Metallic straps automatically adjusted for his size and secured him in place.
"Forgive me, Colonel, but you should now have access to our systems," Evoth said.
A new connection made itself available through Kyle's implants. Upgrades to their neural implants were one of the first things they'd done so humans could interact with Boxan computing systems. Kyle had bridge officer access, which, on a Boxan ship, gave him the highest level of access. Though they were backup and support for this mission, he had the same level of access as Evoth.
"Thank you," Kyle said.
Boxan computer systems were blazingly fast, and their artificial intelligence construct was extremely helpful in anticipating their needs. The rest of the crew checked in. Given the amount of room on the shuttle, Kyle could easily have brought more people on this mission, but in the end, he wanted to keep it simple. This was new territory for them all. Kyle was here because he wanted first-hand experience on these joint human and Boxan missions. It would help him when he was to call upon others to do the same. He'd decided to only bring a sampling of personnel with different levels of expertise and rank. Participating in local missions was one thing, but going on what would be a multiple-day journey was something else. Kyle opened a comms channel to ECF command.
"Armstrong Base, Boxan Shuttle 27 is ready to depart and awaiting clearance."
"Acknowledged. Shuttle 27, you're clear to depart. Godspeed and a safe return to you all," the ECF flight officer said.
Evoth had the controls ready to go. The shuttle eased off the ground and slowly went through the hangar shield, passing into the vacuum of space beyond. Kyle pulled up several system statuses and saw that the inertia dampeners were fully engaged. Evoth punched in the coordinates, and the shuttle's main engines came online. They sped away from the moon on a several-hour journey to the failed shroud monitor.
"This human, Armstrong, is from your history?" Evoth asked.
"Yes, he was the first man to walk on our moon," Kyle said.
He'd always been a bit of a history buff, and he'd spent many hours poring over anything to do with the space program through the years.
"We honor our species' first steps into the great expanse as well," Evoth said.
"Those were different times here. Those first pioneers into space had difficulty trusting computers to do their calculations for them. They'd insist the calculations be checked by some of the brightest mathematicians of the time, Kyle said.
No way. Is that accurate?
Tom Blake asked.
It's true.
Learn your history, Blake, Kyle said, and turned back to Evoth. The shroud barrier doesn't form a perfect circle around the solar system, does it?
Evoth activated a holoscreen.
This is what we've mapped so far, and the projections show more of an elongated shape. We think the shroud devices are trying to accommodate this system of planets' orbital trajectories.
Kyle peered at the graphical model.
It doesn't look big enough.
That's because it's not, Tom said. The latest data shows us that the barrier could impact the outer planets.
Do they know when? Kyle asked.
It's still being measured, Tom answered.
We can get telemetry from the Shroud Network, but we can't control them, Evoth said. We've done extensive studies, and it seems to be the last command that was uploaded to the Shroud Network that's preventing us from accessing it.
Kyle frowned and thought, as he normally did when the subject of the barrier came up. They weren't exactly sure how the barrier had come to be, and the Boxons confirmed that this latent ability was unknown even to them.
You based the design of the shroud devices on a technology you found? Kyle asked.
That is correct. It's drawer technology, and we suspect that whoever sent the final signal to the shroud devices must have had knowledge of them, Evoth said.
Could it have been the drawer themselves? Tom asked.
Unlikely. The drawer disappeared many thousands of cycles ago, Evoth said.
They spent the next few hours going over what they would find. They didn't need to go near the barrier, which they could only detect by the presence of the shroud device. The monitors they'd put in place were far enough away that it wouldn't bring them to the current edge of known safe space. More than a year ago, aboard a ship like the Endurance, this trip would have taken several weeks to achieve. Aboard this Boxan shuttle, they could make the journey in a few hours. The Boxans were enabling them to leapfrog over 100 years of development in multiple scientific areas of study. Many were happy for the help, but there were others who were worried about such radical advances for a society that wasn't prepared for them. But they didn't have a choice. Last year, the Zygin fleet almost made it to their planet, and it would have been game over for the people of Earth. Kyle would take any advantage he could to keep his family safe, and many supporters of the ECF would do the same. Kyle glanced at Evoth.
Do you ever think about your home?
Often, and the colony as well,
Evoth said. Kyle pressed his lips together, wondering at the distinction the Boxon had made. Michael Hunsicker had warned him that there were some subjects Boxons were sensitive to, and talking about their home planet of Sethion was at the top of the list.
Do you have a family? Kyle asked.
I have procreated, and what you would call my children have reached maturity. They serve in our military, Evoth said.
The Boxon looked over at him.
Have you a family?
Yes. I have a wife and 2 daughters at home. Talia and Milena are attending college now, but both of them have been pushing a transfer to the new ECF Academy, Kyle said.
Evoth nodded and stopped when he saw Kyle's expression.
Does this not please you? Your daughters wish to help protect your home planet.
It does, Kyle said. When you put it in those terms, I couldn't be prouder of my daughters. But as a father, my first instinct is for them to be safe. What the ECF is doing, what we're doing, isn't safe.
Evoth regarded him for a few moments.
It's better that they are choosing their own destiny rather than having it thrust upon their shoulders.
Kyle swallowed. He knew Evoth was speaking about what his own species had to contend with. Every member of the Boxan Society was expected to serve for the survival of their species. Try as he might, Kyle could scarcely imagine a world like that, and what little he could imagine scared him to no end.
We are approaching the first shroud monitor, Adyas said. Main power offline. The only thing working on it is the distress beacon.
Evoth approached the defective shroud monitor and positioned the shuttle so it was just several meters outside the rear airlock doors. Earlier, they'd decided to bring the shroud monitor inside and run a full diagnostic with the shuttle's computer systems to figure out why it was failing.
Clear to proceed, Evoth said, and looked at Kyle. Would your team like to assist?
Kyle nodded.
Pearson and Dawson, you're up. Go help Adyas bring it in.
Preliminary scans of the area showed no hostile forces.
Colonel,
Tom said.
What is it?
Kyle asked.
I'd like to go with them,
Tom said.
I know you would, but no, Kyle said.
He knew the young ECF recruit was eager to do something important, but even though he'd been cleared for routine spacewalks, Kyle only wanted experienced veterans out there.
Maybe next time, Kyle said.
Hope returned to Tom's eyes, and the sting of disappointment was all but gone. Kyle glanced at Evoth and wondered what the boxen was thinking, but he just couldn't tell.
Commander, we're at the airlock,
Kevin Dawson said.
Acknowledged. You're clear to proceed,
Evoth said. They watched the main holoscreen that showed the Boxan and human team retrieving the shroud monitoring device. The device had a square body of dark metal with a rounded sensor array on the top. After placement, they had the capacity to move short distances.
No visible signs of damage,
Adyas said. They attached a tether to the device. Kyle watched as Dawson and Pearson circled around it to continue their visual inspection and be sure the tether was properly deployed. They returned to the airlock and slowly retracted the device inside, operating at zero gravity. They closed the airlock doors and Adyas slowly engaged the gravity field. The shroud monitoring device came to rest on an elevated platform that hovered above the ground, and together they pushed the device inside the storage area.
We're clear,
Adyas said. Kyle and Evoth got up from their couches and headed down to the others. They circled around the device. Adyas had already opened a panel and run a cable from the wall to the device.
Running diagnostic and commencing data retrieval,
Adyas said. Kyle kept looking for signs of damage to the device. It was the size of a large automobile, but was otherwise unremarkable to look at. Evoth and Adyas were watching the data feed from it, while the onboard AI disseminated the information. The boxens glanced at each other in alarm.
Crano,
Evoth said,
have you detected anything near us?
Negative, Commander. Nothing is on our scanners.
What is it?
Kyle asked.
There is no failure. Someone shut it down,
Evoth said.
Battle stations, go to personal life support, he said.
Kyle engaged his helmet, which sprang from the storage compartment on his back while they raced to the upper level.
Bring our weapons online,
Evoth said and took his seat on the command couch. Kyle joined him and looked at the shuttle status. Weapons remained offline.
Weapon systems won't respond, Crano said.
Evoth was about to answer when a bright blue flash of light came from the storage area. Kyle's head was jerked to the side by the small blast and main power went offline. He tried to access the ship's systems, but everything was offline. Kyle unstrapped himself. Lights from the top of his helmet came on.
Sound off, he said.
Dawson here.
Pearson here.
What the hell happened to the power? Oh, Blake here.
Kyle saw Crano and Adyas nod towards him. He turned back to Evoth.
Arm yourselves. Prepare to repel boarders,
Evoth said.
Boarders? Did he say boarders?
Blake asked.
Who would be out here? There was nothing on the scanners,
Kyle said. Deep red lines came on from Evoth's power armor.
This was a trap. The Zaijins are here.
Kyle's mouth went dry. He drew his sidearm and wished he had something bigger with him.
We need to get main power restored.
Adyas headed down to the lower level.
Pearson, give her a hand, Kyle said.
Crano rose from his couch.
Commander, we need to jettison the device.
Evoth nodded, and they all went down to the lower level. Kyle glanced at Blake, who was wide-eyed and breathing rapidly. Kyle pulled him aside.
You need to calm down.
Blake looked at him with wide eyes.
The Zaijins weren't supposed to be here. How could they be here?
Kyle grabbed him and gave him a gentle shake.
I don't know. One thing at a time. Got it? First, we need to get this thing off the ship. Then we restore main power and get the hell out of here.
A canister dropped to the floor, and Blake's eyes darted toward the sound.
There are no ships in the vicinity. So if the Zaijins are here, they're not outside our door. It's going to take them time to get here. Got it?
Kyle said again. Blake's breathing slowed down, and he nodded.
Sorry, I just...
Kyle nodded.
Let's get to work.
They went down to the lower level. Evoth and the others already had the shroud monitoring device moving toward the airlock. An alarm came to prominence on the heads-up display of Kyle's suit. "There's an active signal being broadcast from that thing," he said. Dawson pointed his plasma rifle at it.
"Say the word and I'll blow this thing to kingdom come, sir."
"Let's get it off the ship first, then we'll destroy it," Kyle said, and Evoth agreed.
They opened the airlock doors, and Crano and Dawson went inside. Once they were sealed inside, the outer airlock doors opened and they pushed the device out. When it was far enough away, Dawson opened fire. Orange plasma bolts shot from his rifle, and within a handful of shots, the shroud monitoring device was destroyed. The broadcast signal stopped. Kyle turned around and saw Evoth standing in front of a terminal, trying to get it to come on.
"Why didn't the emergency backup system come on?"
Evoth kept working. He opened the panel below. There was a loud roar from inside the airlock, and Kyle spun around. Blake cried out and cowered over to the side. Several large bangs came from inside the airlock. Kyle and Evoth approached it slowly.
"Dawson, do you read?" Kyle asked.
There was no response. He saw several dark shapes through the small airlock windows. A pale, sneering face framed in a silver helmet peered from inside and then immediately moved away.
"Take cover," Evoth said.
"Pearson, Adjas, back to the rear airlock, double time," Kyle said.
He moved behind a storage container and aimed his sidearm at the door.
"They can't get inside. They don't have access," Blake said.
The airlock alarms blared and the doors started to open. Kyle blew out several strong breaths. He wouldn't shoot blind. Dawson or Crano could still be in there. Zygins in silver spacesuits rushed inside, and Kyle fired his weapon at them. Kyle aimed for their heads, knowing it was the most vulnerable part of any spacesuit. The first two Zygins went down. Another took its place and fired its weapon at him. Kyle felt something hit his suit, and then everything shut down. An electrical shock arced through his system, and he fell to the floor. He tried to open his eyes, but was having trouble. He heard Evoth roar as he fired his weapon, only to be overwhelmed by Zygin's returning fire. Kyle faded in and out of consciousness.
"Don't hurt me!"
Blake screamed. Kyle opened his eyes and saw Blake fall to the ground. Bolts of energy crawled along his suit, rendering it offline. He felt himself getting dragged out from the storage area. He couldn't move his hands or feet. He then heard several thumps next to him.
"I want the Boxons put over there. Keep them separate from the humans," a voice said.
"Mar Arden, there are a human and a Boxon near the main engines. They're being brought up."
"Excellent," Mar Arden said.
Kyle craned his neck and saw a Zygin standing nearby. There were quite a few others, and Kyle stopped counting when he reached 20. The Zygin standing near him squatted down, its pale skin and purple eyes regarding him.
"Greetings, human. I'm Mar Arden. You're not the first human I've met, but I'm looking forward to learning all there is to know about your planet and your species."
Kyle glared at him.
"Go to hell."
Mar Arden looked amused.
"Yes, the last human I met said something similar in the beginning. I assure you, you'll find that I always get what I want in the end."
Kyle clenched his teeth. Mar Arden stood back up.
"Let's get main power restored," he said, and walked away.
Much to Kyle's surprise, main power came on shortly after that. It was as if they'd flipped a switch. How had they disabled the power in the first place?
"Signal the others," Mar Arden said. "We've got ourselves a fully operational Boxan combat shuttle."
There were several grunts of acknowledgement, and Kyle felt as if he'd been kicked in the stomach. They'd thought they were safe behind the barrier, that there was no way for the Zygins to reach them. They'd been wrong, and no one on Earth was the wiser. The Zygins had managed to take them all alive, and they more or less left them alone. As time went on, whatever they'd used to disable his suit had worn off, and Kyle was able to move. His hands were bound in front of him. He tried to keep his movement small because he didn't want to draw the Zygins' attention. He glanced over at Evoth and the other Boxons. They were more securely held and seemed to be unconscious.
"Colonel, are you awake?"
Blake asked in a hushed tone.
"Yes. Are you okay?" Kyle asked.
"They did something to my suit, and next thing I knew I was next to you. Pearson and Dawson are still knocked out.
Kyle glanced over at the command area and saw the Zaijin Mar-Ar Den sitting on the command couch, speaking with the other Zaijins. They kept their spacesuits on with their helmets.
I don't get it, Blake said. How'd they do this?
I don't know, Kyle said.
There was movement from the command area.
I see some of you are awake. I bet you're wondering what happened.
Kyle looked over and saw Mar-Ar Den walking over to them. Several armed Zaijins followed him.
I'm afraid you've become a victim to Boxan predictability and a very telling interaction from your own species as well, Mar-Ar Den said.
The Zaijin came to stand before Blake, and Kyle heard him utter a gasp.
What do you mean by Boxan predictability?
Kyle asked, trying to draw the Zaijin's attention away from Blake. Mar-Ar Den swung his gaze toward him.
We knew that if we kept disabling their monitoring devices, they'd send someone out to investigate. A few simple protocols were designed to become active once a diagnostic was run on the device, and your ship became ours.
But there were no ships on our scanners. How did you even get here? Blake asked, his curiosity overcoming his fear for the moment.
Mar-Ar Den regarded the young tech specialist as if deciding whether he was worth answering.
If this is the measure of your species, I think it will be much easier to subjugate them than we initially thought.
We're not weak, Blake said.
Mar-Ar Den reached down and grabbed Blake by his suit, lifting him into the air.
On the contrary, you are among the weakest species we've ever come across, he said harshly.
Blake's breath came in gasps, and Mar-Ar Den looked down at Kyle.
We waited in the Great Expanse without a ship for you to arrive. That is the measure of our conviction.
Kyle hardened his gaze.
I'm sure you must be very impressed with yourself. Why don't you come to Earth and we'll give you a proper greeting?
Mar-Ar Den dropped Blake.
In due time, human. In due time.
Chapter 18. Kalin, along with the crew of the Athena and the Boxans, planned their next move. They needed to secure a large ship for their purposes. Cladomore's team would take care of securing a ship and the additional crew required for a journey to Sethion, but taking a ship by force was a treasonous act, and the High Council would send ships to destroy them before they could get near Sethion. They argued and tried to plan a way around this fact, but they always came back to it. After having spent the last few hours planning a way forward, they'd lapsed into an uneasy silence. They were no closer to being able to leave Oleron. Technically, the Athena could leave at any time, but all of them agreed it would be a bad idea for the Athena to travel to Sethion alone. They were currently in one of the training facilities separate from the others.
Let's come right out and ask the High Council for help. Hodak is already there and must have told them what happened,
Kalin said.
You already know the answer they'll give,
Cladomore said.
I do, but at least they can't say we never asked. We put it out there on the table. They can't accept that I have the Mardoxian potential and then deny my abilities to use it. Not now. Not with Majasalax and even Hodak vouching for me in the past,
Kalin said.
It's not a matter of belief, Majasalax said. Where the High Council is concerned, they weigh every action against the risk to the colony.
Zack cleared his throat.
I agree with Kalin. Let's ask them and volunteer to go. We'll need their support to get past the quarantine anyway.
Kalin watched Hicks give Zack a sidelong glance.
What?
Zack asked.
I'm just surprised you don't intend to come up with a way to beat the security of the quarantine zone, Hicks said.
Garrock grunted in agreement.
Don't think I haven't thought of it. But we can't hang all our efforts on my ability to get past the quarantine zone. It's there for a reason, and the fact that it's still there speaks to how good the security is that supports the quarantine. Given the time frame we're working with and the fact that the Boxans on Sethion need our help sooner rather than later, betting on me getting past security isn't our best option, Zack said.
He's right, Garrock said.
So what's the best way to get through the quarantine zone?
Hicks asked. Honestly? Having authorization from the Boxan High Council, Zack said. He glanced around at the others. I know it seems obvious, but it really is the best way.
What if we can't get authorization? Hicks asked.
Zack shrugged. Then we'll need to find another way. But it could take a while.
I'll go to the High Council, Kaelin said.
Not alone you won't, Zack said.
Kaelin squared her shoulders.
Yes, alone. I need the rest of you to prep the Athena.
Now hold on a minute, Hicks said. If we all just suddenly return to the Athena, they'll know something's up.
And, Zack added, I'm not letting you go face the Boxan High Council alone.
I didn't say I'd be by myself. I meant without any of you. Clattermore will be with me,
Kaelin said.
The Boxan battle commander looked over at her in surprise.
That would not be wise, Clattermore said. I agree, Garrok added.
Kaelin shook her head and could have sworn she saw Majasalax roll her eyes.
It has to be you, she said to Clattermore. You threatened Hodak with a gun.
Clattermore's brows pushed forward.
That was for your protection.
Yes, I know, and I appreciate it, but you need to tell the High Council. Meanwhile, the others will be preparing to go to Sethion, and they won't be able to blame you for the things the others are doing. Also, you'll gain support for our rogue mission to Sethion, Kaelin said.
I'm afraid you overestimate my influence, Clattermore said.
You don't give yourself enough credit. Your actions in the Nerva Star system have shown the rest of the Boxan military that there are other ways to fight the Zaijins. And I don't believe all Boxans can be compliant with leaving Boxans behind on Sethion who need their help. They might not volunteer to go on the mission, but there are other ways they can show their support,
Kaelin said.
She's right, Majasalak said. You're not the outcast you once were. Boxans are looking to you for direction. I think you'll find there are those who will support you, even if it goes against the wishes of the High Council.
Clattermore looked away from them and blew out a breath.
I don't want to go against them, he said, and swung his gaze back to the others. I want our species to stop using our survival as an excuse not to take action. Leaving Boxans behind on Sethion who are calling for our help and neglecting to return to all the Star Shroud monitoring stations to retrieve the scientists who are stranded there isn't okay. I want us to be a species where we don't leave any of our kind behind, or our allies.
Garrok and the other Boxans saluted with a fist across their chest.
Battle, Commander,
they said. Clattermore returned the salute, and Kaelin suspected that even he was surprised by his own admission that the Boxans needed to change their ways.
We still need a ship, Majasalak said.
There's very little chance of being able to commandeer a ship that's actively being used, Garrok said.
Clattermore glanced at Majasalak with a slightly amused expression.
I'm just surprised you hadn't guessed this part of the plan.
No one can see everything. Not even a Mardoxian priestess, Majasalak said.
There is a ship we can use. I only just learned of its existence a short while ago, Clattermore said. What ship? The ones in Alaron space are all part of the home fleet,
Garrok said.
In the shipyards, there's a heavy cruiser that's nearing completion, Clattermore said.
Garrok and the others took a few moments to consider this.
We'll need additional crew, Garrok said. As I said before, I've only just learned of this heavy cruiser, but I've already begun recruiting for our next mission, Clattermore said. They might change their minds if they know we're going against the High Council, Garrok said. Perhaps, but by the time some of them learn of it, we'll be away. And there'll also be Boxans at the shipyards who can help, Clattermore said.
Hicks looked at Kaelin. I'm not sure about this. We should tell whoever's going to help us what's at stake, he said.
I'll give them the option to leave, but don't forget that Boxan ships, even heavy cruisers, are designed to be used with minimal crew, Clattermore said.
Kaelin knew Clattermore was right. Since there were fewer Boxans than ever before in their history, they'd had to take steps to make all the ships in their fleet more efficient in terms of crew. This had led to them pouring research and development into AI constructs to step in and help them staff large ships with a significantly smaller crew if they needed to. They spent the next hour going over the details of their plan. There were some loose ends that had the potential to become real problems, but they were running out of time. Kaelin and Clattermore needed to get to the High Council while it was still in session for today. She waited for Clattermore to finish speaking with Varek, his second in command.
You have the list of contacts. They'll be expecting a message telling them where to meet, Clattermore said.
How many of them will actually come?
Varric asked.
Probably not all of them, but enough to make a difference. I hope,
Clatomor said. Varric left them, and it was just Clatomor and Majasalax left. Zack hadn't liked leaving Kaelin, but in the end the others needed his help to overcome some of the security hurdles the rest of them needed to get past. Together, they headed toward the building where the High Council was in session. One of the advantages of the Mardoxian sect was almost unmitigated access to the Council, which allowed them to pass through the various security checkpoints to get inside. Just outside the chamber doors, Majasalax leaned over to Kaelin.
Trust your instincts. They've gotten you this far.
Kaelin's stomach was a flutter of activity, but she knew this was the right path for them to take.
Thanks,
she said. The Boxen soldiers at the door motioned for them to go inside. The council chambers were half-moon-shaped, and the discussion appeared to have come to a stop as they walked into the room. Hodak was standing at the speaker's podium, and after noticing the attention of the Boxens in the room shift, he glanced behind him and saw Kaelin and the others. High Councilor Awan stood up and looked pleased to see them.
Thank you for coming. Upon hearing Hodak's comments about your recent experience in the Mardoxian Chamber, the rest of the council is extremely curious to speak with you.
Kaelin approached, along with Clatomor and Majasalax. Hodak moved away from the speaker's podium, and Majasalax went to stand by his side. High Councilor Awan took notice of Clatomor, who was standing next to Kaelin.
Battle Commander,
Awan said.
High Councilor, I have come before you for two reasons. First, to reaffirm my support of the crew of the Athena, and second, to speak to the actions I've taken while at the Mardoxian complex,
Clatomor said. High Councilor Awan nodded, and his face became serious.
This is a closed session, and whatever is discussed within this session cannot leave these walls.
Clatomor glanced around at the other council members and over at Hodak.
Haven't there been enough secrets? It's these secrets that are choking the life out of our species. For clarity's sake, I'm talking about what Kaelin saw on Sethion and the evidence supporting the regular communications from our home world.
We're well aware of the evidence that supports the claims,
Awan said.
Then give us your support to return to Sethion and rescue those we left behind,
Clatomor said. Kaelin watched the rest of the counselors. Some were stone-faced and just watched them intently, while others seemed troubled by the fact that Kaelin had been able to catch a glimpse of what was happening on Sethion. Kaelin cleared her throat.
I realize this may be difficult for you to hear. No one here is judging the actions the High Council took when you left your homeworld. There must have been so many things happening that I can scarcely wrap my head around it all. I haven't lived through the collapse of my home world, and I hope I never have to witness something so horrible. I truly believe that the actions taken at the time were for the survival of your race. But that was then, and this is now. Those Boxens deserve to be rescued. The fact that they've survived all this time is a testament to Boxan ingenuity and your determination to survive.
High Councilor Awan regarded her for a moment.
One trait we've noticed about your species is your passion and the conviction of your beliefs and principles. They're intoxicating,
the High Councilor said, and he glanced at Clatomor.
They have their place, but they alone aren't reason enough to return to Sethion.
Why not?
Kaelin asked.
If we were to return to Sethion's star system and authorize entry into the quarantine zone, a number of things will happen. The Zaijins will be alerted that we've done so, and the Confederation will also be aware, both of which puts this colony at significant risk of discovery. Most of the Confederation species are firmly under Zaijin control. On Sethion, we have no way to determine who's under the Zaijin influence and who isn't. I don't think you understand what you're asking us to do. When we say anyone can be under the Zaijin influence, you should know that this is not restricted by gender or age. Both were used to exploit our race. I'm afraid that what you saw were the remnant factions of Boxens still under the Zaijin influence, warring amongst themselves.
High Councilor Awan finished. Kaelin started to reply, but stopped herself. There was nothing she could say that would sway them to even consider the possibility that there were Boxans free of the Zygen influence fighting for their lives.
"Would you be so sure if this were being reported by Majasilex?"
Clatomore asked.
"Our answer would not change,"
High Counselor Awan said.
"I'm not..."
Clatomore began.
"He's right,"
Kaelin interrupted.
"I have no way to determine if any of the Boxans I saw were under the Zygen influence,"
she said to Clatomore. Kaelin looked back at the High Council.
"Thank you for taking the time to explain things to me. It's difficult to accept. We want what's best for your race, and when I saw Boxans suffering, I wanted to do something about it."
"Your compassion is commendable. Now, I think this session is finished for the day,"
High Counselor Awan said.
"High Counselor,"
Kaelin said,
"I need a few moments of your time. Are you able to meet with me after this session?"
she asked. High Counselor Awan considered the request.
"I'm overdue for my time in the resonance chamber."
"That's fine. We can talk along the way,"
Kaelin said. The council session ended, and the Boxans went off to their other appointments. Kaelin walked next to High Counselor Awan, with Clatomore and Majasilex following behind. Awan invited Hodak to join them. Kaelin scouted ahead to the resonance chamber to note the exits. Since they were already inside the Boxan government building, there weren't additional soldiers posted at the resonance chambers, but the High Counselor had two bodyguards who followed behind them all. Kaelin glanced back at them. They were heavily armed in full power armor.
"Have you made use of our resonance chambers?"
High Counselor Awan asked.
"Yes, they're quite beautiful,"
Kaelin said, following him inside. The resonance chambers reminded Kaelin of a botanical garden and were quite peaceful. The moisture in the air carried the scents of a forest shortly after a rainfall, and the difference between Alaron's climate and the chambers was so apparent that she wondered why the Boxans had stayed here for as long as they had. There were other Boxans here, all in quiet meditation, and the High Counselor led them to a more secluded spot.
"What would you like to discuss with me?"
"Zack has been requesting materials to test his theories for the Shroud Barrier and hasn't been getting much cooperation,"
Kaelin said. The High Counselor sat down in one of the stone circles designated for meditation. He took a deep breath and sighed.
"Resources are scarce,"
High Counselor Awan said. Kaelin watched as the Boxan closed his eyes for a moment. She reached into her pocket and pulled out a metallic rod, quickly pressing the rod against the side of High Counselor Awan's neck and releasing a charge of energy. The High Counselor slumped forward with a great sigh. Kaelin backed away, pretending she didn't know what had happened, and the High Counselor's bodyguards quickly ran over. Clatomore pulled out his plasma pistol.
"I'm afraid I need you to step away,"
he said. One of the bodyguards started to bring up his weapon.
"Don't! I promise you we won't harm the High Counselor. You have my word as a soldier."
"What's the meaning of this?"
Hodak asked.
"We're taking High Counselor Awan with us to Sethion,"
Kaelin said. Hodak swung his powerful gaze toward Majasilex.
"Did you know about this?"
he asked.
"Of course,"
Majasilex said, and pulled out her own Boxan stunner.
"Come with us, Hodak. See it for yourself."
"And if I refuse?"
Hodak asked.
"Then, when you wake up, you can alert everyone else about what we've done,"
Majasilex said. Clatomore had his plasma pistol aimed at the two bodyguards. Kaelin couldn't see their faces through their helmets, so she had no idea what they were thinking, but one of them seemed poised to draw his weapon at any moment. He stepped away from the other guard, and Clatomore pointed his weapon at him.
"What I do today, I do for all Boxans,"
Clatomore said.
"This is treason. We'll hunt you down,"
the bodyguard said.
"Put down your..."
The bodyguard sank to the ground, his armor going rigid. The second bodyguard stood behind him and retracted his helmet.
"He wasn't going to let you go,"
he said. Clatomore returned his pistol to the holster he had hidden in his own power armor.
"What's your name?"
he asked.
"I'm Jaxu, Battle Commander. I will come with you and continue to protect the High Counselor, but I want to know the state of Sethion."
"Thank you,"
Clatomore said.
"Now, help me lift him up."
Kaelin turned toward Hodak.
"This was my idea," she said.
Hodak's eyes widened in shock.
"But everything you said in the council session, was it all a lie?"
Kaelin shook her head. No, I meant every word. But I'm unwilling to condemn thousands of lives so you can feel safe on Alaron. You'll find that we humans can be a bit impulsive. I know there are Boxans on Sethion who aren't under the Zygen influence. I know it because I saw it with my own eyes. Why don't you come with us and see for yourself?
Hodak's lips pressed together in a slight grimace.
You're bringing High Counselor Awan to get through the quarantine zone.
That's right, Kaelin said.
Once the other counselors realize what you've done, they'll send the fleet after you, Hodak said.
I know. Hopefully we'll have reached Sethion by then, Kaelin said.
You would risk the Alliance for this? Hodak asked.
I hope it doesn't come to that, but yes, I would, Kaelin said.
Hodak glanced at the unconscious form of High Counselor Awan, and then he looked at Majaslax.
You don't need to stun me. I'll do what I can to see that you get a chance to get to Sethion.
Kaelin frowned, not sure whether she should trust him or not.
Why the change of heart? She asked.
What we do. You, Majaslax, and I, sometimes needs to be taken on faith. Faith in our abilities and in the fact that we don't know everything. I don't believe you'd take the actions you're taking without careful consideration. So I'm placing my faith in your abilities as a recognized member of the Mardoxian sect. While you are of another race, your voice will carry great weight when dealing with our species. That's what I can offer. But if you're wrong, there's very little I can do to protect you from our laws,
Hodak said. Majaslax stepped forward.
You would do this? You would make Kaelin a full member of the Mardoxian sect?
Yes. I was already considering it. We've been so long looking for another species with the potential that admitting them into the sect seemed like a logical course of action,
Hodak said. Kaelin didn't know what to say. She hadn't expected anything like this.
Thank you, she said. I promise that if I'm wrong about what I saw on Sethion, we'll leave the planet as we found it.
Hodak regarded her for a moment.
I appreciate you saying that, but I know for a fact that you don't believe you're wrong, and I hope you're right. Now, you must be going. I think I'll stay here for a while.
Hodak knelt down within the circle of stones the High Counselor had been in, when Kaelin stunned him.
She looked at the others. It would have implicated him if I hadn't stunned him.
Majaslax led them toward one of the exits nearest them that wasn't used very often. Kaelin felt oddly calm for having committed a treasonous act against a head of state. She'd only told Clattomore what she'd intended, knowing the others would try to talk her out of it. Ideally, she wanted the Council's cooperation, but instead, she'd had to rely on contingency plans. Now they just had to get their kidnapped head of state off the planet without anyone the wiser. Chapter 19. Kaelin met up with Zack and the others. Clattomore and Majaslax had taken High Counselor Awan with them to the shipyards where the heavy cruiser was. Kaelin was to ensure that the rest of them were able to reach the Athena. Garrok was with the Athena crew and gave her a suspicious glance when she joined them.
Where are the others?
Garrok asked.
What happened with the Council? Zack asked.
Clattomore is seeing to the ship. He wants you to come with us to the Athena. He thought it would set certain Boxans at ease if you were to go with us,
Kaelin said. Garrok regarded her for a moment.
This isn't the first time you've commandeered my help. I feel as if I'm being kept in the dark. Again.
Kaelin considered whether she should tell Garrok that they'd kidnapped the High Counselor.
I'll tell you all about it once we're aboard the Athena, she offered.
I don't know why you feel you can't tell me before we get on the ship, Garrok said.
Hey. What happened with the Council? Zack asked again.
Kaelin gave Garrok a sympathetic smile, and then looked at Zack.
While they acknowledged what I'd seen, they still firmly believe that all the Boxans left on Sethion are under the Zygen influence.
So they won't help us then, Zack said.
I didn't say that,
Kaelin replied, and glanced at Garrok. Garrok's eyes widened.
What have you done?
Kaelin pressed her lips together.
I secured help from the Council by aiding in the kidnapping of one of its members so they'll disable the quarantine when we get to Sethion.
Garrok winced and looked at her as if he didn't quite believe what he'd just heard her say.
Who have you taken against their will?
he asked. Kaelin glanced at the others to be sure they weren't overheard.
Awan,
she said.
The High Counselor!
Kaelin shushed him.
Yes, and it's done. Now all we need to do is get on our shuttle and get to the Athena.
Garak opened his mouth, and then closed it again.
I shouldn't have asked. Of all the crazy... You're supposed to be the sensible one, he said.
They left me no choice. There are Boxans on Sethion who need our help. Are you really going to stay behind now?
Kaelin challenged. Garak walked away towards the others, shaking his head. Kaelin and Zack were alone.
There's something you should know, Zack said.
All right, what is it? But I should warn you, I've already committed one treasonous act today.
Zack snorted.
I did tell you that getting the Council to grant us access would be the quickest way to get through the quarantine zone. I just never thought you'd kidnap someone.
We can return him if you think you can beat the security there.
Zack cocked his head to the side, considering.
No. This is much better. Maybe if some of these Boxans witness it firsthand, we'll all come through this without ending up in a holding cell. Or worse. Regardless, we're committed now. What I wanted to tell you is that the Boxans have increased their efforts to gain remote access to the Athena's systems, so we're not the only ones breaking the rules.
They're trying to take control of the ship?
At first I thought they were just trying to get access and maybe copy the data, but now I think they're trying to take the ship away from us, Zack said.
Kaelin nodded and was considering what Zack had just said when he leaned closer to her.
I'm sorry I didn't help you out right away. I was trying not to screw things up for us here, Zack said.
Kaelin placed her hand on his shoulder.
You're the one thing I don't have any doubts about, she said.
Zack frowned and thought.
You're not mad?
Not anymore. I knew you'd help me eventually. Have you ever really said no to me?
Kaelin asked while arching her eyebrow. Zack let out a small laugh, and Kaelin did the same.
I guess not. And now that I know you can use a stunner, I'll be sure to watch my step, Zack said.
They joined the others, and Kaelin filled them in with the omissions of certain facts. Once they met up with Clattomore, she'd tell them the truth. They wouldn't like it, but they'd eventually understand. She needed them to focus on getting to the Athena rather than the fact that they were kidnapping a head of state. Now, all they needed to do was escape from Alaron.
Chapter 20 After some quick planning, the crew of the Athena decided to stagger their approach to the shuttle. Zack and Garak had already gone through the security checkpoint. Kaelin waited with Emma and Brenda Goodwin. Katie Garcia joined them.
The others are in position on the other side, she said.
Kaelin nodded and looked at Emma.
Are you sure you're fine with this? Otherwise, Katie can...
I'll be fine,
Emma said, jamming her hand in her pocket and clutching the stunner.
It's only if they give us a problem. But just to be sure, this won't hurt them, right?
She asked.
No, it just renders the motor functions of their power armor inert for a short period of time, and it will knock them out, but they'll be fine,
Kaelin said. Brenda had her arms crossed in front of her and seemed to be hugging herself. She then shot her hands to her sides.
I'm ready,
the Athena's medical officer said. Kaelin's internal heads-up display brought a message from Zack into prominence. We're in the shuttle. Once I see that you're in position, we'll disrupt their communications. Heading to the checkpoint now, Kaelin sent back. Kaelin glanced at Katie, who was walking next to her.
Zack's ready,
she said. The Athena's shuttle occupied a landing pad inside a secure area under Boxan control. There were defensive towers in place, and she knew there were strike fighter patrols, but none were in their vicinity. The defensive towers had once been part of the original Boxan military installation when Alaron was just an outpost. This security checkpoint wasn't used often because of its location in relation to the city, and only a few Boxan soldiers were working there. Kaelin moved forward, noting the others spreading themselves among the other soldiers.
Hello,
Kaelin said, and sent her access code to the soldier at the checkpoint. A small holo screen on the soldier's terminal flickered, and he glanced over at it in surprise.
Apologies, but I'm afraid we're in lockdown.
Lockdown?
Kaelin said, feigning confusion.
We just need to make a run to our ship, and we have authorization.
The soldier frowned as he worked through the options on the screen.
I can see that. but the lockdown supersedes the authorization. I'm afraid I can't let any of you pass.
Kaelin raised her chin and squared her shoulders.
What do you mean, supersedes my authorization? Our access was given to us by the High Council, and I'm a member of the Mardoxian sect.
The soldier glanced at his partner, who looked just as confused.
I'm sure this is just a misunderstanding. I'll open a comms channel back to Central and see if I can find out what's going on.
Kaelin waited, and the soldier frowned at his hollow screen in confusion.
What's the problem?
Kaelin asked.
I can't open a comms channel, the soldier said.
As the soldier looked away, Kaelin jammed the stunner into the boxen's hip. The soldier's power armor went rigid, and he fell over. Kaelin then turned and saw the other boxen soldier fall over beside a very pale-looking Emma Roberson. Emma quickly handed the stunner over to Katie.
I think I'll let you get the next one, she said.
Kaelin circled around to the soldier's terminal and released the doors. Brenda checked on the two unconscious soldiers and then met them at the door.
They're fine. They'll wake up a short while from now and wonder what happened, Brenda said.
Kaelin led them through the doors.
Did you expect the lockdown so soon?
Emma asked.
No, I thought we'd already be on the Athena by the time they noticed anything,
Kaelin said. They quickly walked over to the shuttle. As they closed in, Kaelin noticed Hicks and the others running towards them.
We have to move,
Kaelin said. They ran the rest of the way to the shuttle and climbed aboard.
What's with the lockdown?
Hicks asked.
I don't know. I thought maybe Cladomore ran into some trouble,
Kaelin said. Kaelin climbed into the pilot's seat next to Zack.
I have comms jammed in the immediate area, but they'll be able to override it.
Right about now, Zack said.
A high-priority comms channel opened from flight control. Kaelin initiated the shuttle's engines.
Shuttle Athena, we're under lockdown. You will shut down your engines immediately,
the boxen flight officer said.
What seems to be the problem?
Kaelin asked. She glanced behind her to see that everyone was secured in a seat. The only exception was Garrok, who sat on the floor, looking a bit sulky.
Shuttle Athena, please shut down your engines. You're not authorized to leave,
the boxen flight officer said in a higher tone.
We're heading back to our ship for routine maintenance,
Kaelin said, and engaged the engines. The shuttle hovered above the ground, and the landing gear retracted inside. Combat alarms blared as the defense towers locked onto them.
Shuttle Athena, you are to land your shuttle immediately,
the boxen flight officer ordered. Kaelin sat poised with her hand on the thrusters.
You're not going to shoot us down. If you do, not only would you kill me and the entire Athena crew, but you'd lose your only link to the drawer. If you don't allow us to leave, the Athena's AI has instructions to fly itself into the planet. No one wins this way. I know you've been trying to take control of the Athena's computer systems, and I know you failed to do so. We're leaving, and that's the end of it. What we're doing is for the benefit of all boxens.
Kaelin closed the comms channel without waiting for a reply and punched it. The shuttle darted away, and she set a course for the Athena.
At least they didn't shoot us down, Zack said.
I knew they wouldn't,
Kaelin said.
What's with the lockdown anyway? Do you honestly think they're just going to let us waltz out of here?
Zack asked.
Let's get to the Athena and we'll take it from there,
Kaelin said. She opened a comms channel to the ship.
Athena, I'd like you to begin pre-flight checks so we can be underway once we're on board.
Of course, Commander. And might I add that it will be wonderful to have all of you aboard again,
the AI said. Kaelin closed the comms channel.
Sounds like she missed us, Zack said.
Kaelin smiled. The crew hadn't been aboard the Athena together since they'd first arrived. Seeing the ship grow larger on the holoscreen set her at ease. It was almost like they were coming home. Kaelin knew they were taking some dangerous risks where the boxens were concerned, but in her heart she knew this was the right thing to do. She just hoped they wouldn't be too late to help the boxens on Cetheon. In her mind, she caught a fleeting glimpse of the boxen in the red traditional boxan armor, squatting down behind an icy mound, weapon clutched in their hands while they waited for the approaching figures that were stalking forward like hunters who had trapped their quarry.